Welcome to Idle Red Hands Weekly. I'm Jeremy.
I'm Chris.
And what is Idle Red Hands Weekly? It is the future. Humans have achieved virtual immortality. Most people have cortical stacks in their spinal columns to store their consciousness. If their body dies, their stack can be stored indefinitely. Their stacks can be downloaded into new bodies or sleeves after death. Roman Catholics do not allow their stacks to be resleeved after death, as they believe the soul goes to heaven when they die, and so would not pass on to the new sleeve. This makes Catholics easy targets for murder, since killers know their victims may not be resleeved to testify. UN Resolution 653 is being debated. The proposition reverses precedent and would allow authorities to temporarily resleeve a deceased Catholic woman to testify in a murder trial. Dual sleeving, or controlling two bodies with one personality, is strictly prohibited by UN law.
Which one is that from?
That is Altered Carbon.
I thought so. Mm. When you started off, I'm like, are we talking about Eclipse Phase or Altered Carbon?
Oh, right. Yeah. Eclipse Phase. Yeah. Yep. It has that same idea. Yeah. So that's a, 2002 kind of cyberpunk set novel by Richard K. Morgan. So a British writer. And I bring that up because they're doing a RPG setting.
Yeah. I've been talking about that too. Possibly from a different angle that you've been.
So I, as you are an emissary from Twitter, I need to discuss with you. And I think it brings up an interesting point that companies are going to have to start being aware of. And I think it's a similar thing to what's going on with Evil Hat and their Cthulhu. Their Fate of Cthulhu.
I'm going to wait to see what that connection is. I'll probably disagree with you.
Look, the connection is a company is going to develop a property, and they need to understand that the writer, the creator, has a point of view as a human being, as a political entity that may not be popular, that may affect people's opinions of this game, and they're going to have to be willing to... I mean, is it fair that they have to suffer kind of repercussions of... a creator's kind of political views, Lovecraft's racism, or Richard K. Morgan's political views. His affiliation with the with
gender critical nonsense.
That seems very unfair for companies to do it because they're investing a lot of time and resources and they're just supporting a creative work. But then you've got the creator in there saying, well, I'm on Twitter. And
I think, I guess first for the Altered Carbon RPG, because that's what we're talking about. I haven't followed up on it to know the difference, but I think there might be some kind of licensing deal where the role-playing game is being licensed from the show rather than the author, the books. I'm blank on what word to say.
Right.
I mean, there's still a connection there because the TV show is based on, you know, the Altered Carbon books, but I guess there's a layer of removal, which is not an actual phrase there, you know. But with the Evil Hat Fate of Cthulhu stuff, which I backed and got, I think there's a, for me, there's a difference there because Lovecraft's stuff is now mostly public domain. And so there, I think there's a real difference between saying, yeah, okay, we're building a game from this body of work that the author has been like roundly criticized as being, you know, all these horrible bigot, racist, all the stuff, but the work is in public domain, so the author is not benefiting from this product at all.
Yeah.
It's not, the money isn't going into some kind of Lovecraft, you know, coffer or whatever, whereas I don't know the specifics with the Altered Carbon thing. That would be my difference between the two things, where like this author is still alive, they're still, it's still able for them to benefit from this new work. So in that case, I would say, yes, you have to be more careful of affiliations. I mean, you want to get into it. I mean, the J.K. Rowling is not so great either.
Right.
And as someone who enjoyed most of those books and saw all those movies, I'm kind of like, eh, well, that's not great. So there are distinctions to be made between author and the author's works. And I think you can still enjoy stuff as long as you're kind of critical of kind of what's going on. You say, I like it. It's problematic. I understand it's problematic. And here's why. I mean, again, as much as I like Conan, Robert E. Howard, who was considered kind of progressive, looking at it through today, you're like, eesh, yeah, some of the stuff is just not good. So,
and I think that's a valid point. And I really wish Lovecraft was on Twitter. That would
I don't think Lovecraft would be able to handle Twitter.
Yeah, that's true.
Actually, or based on the fact Twitter has a Nazi problem, you know, maybe they would be a great, you know, H.P. Lovecraft would never get banned. Right. He'd have that blue check mark spouting all kinds of racist nonsense and still be on Twitter.
It would be a green Eldritch check mark, I believe.
Possibly.
It's an interesting question, an interesting property, and it's too bad that companies have to deal with this now in that way, because tabletop should be escapism. It should be entertainment. And a lot of kind of heavy stuff is being brought into these settings that, I don't know. I don't think that was originally intended. And it's just unfortunate. Specifically about the setting for Altered Carbon, I didn't know anything about that world or anything about that story, and watched the first half of that series. And the first episode on the Netflix series, and the beginning of it was very promising because it was such a wild idea. You know, you could just be re-sleeved. Right. And the idea of prison and the idea of, you just kept somebody out of a body and just put them in a locker and let their consciousness just sit there. But then you could be re-sleeved into any kind of body.
Yeah.
So it just deleted race and gender and everything because you're coming back. It doesn't matter. You're just alive. You're just back. You're just this body. And they, with the show, I'm not sure with the book, but the show, they just gave up that concept very quickly. And they just had a white guy with a Japanese name and okay,
that's what I heard. Because when the Altered Carbon, I've never read the book. When the Altered Carbon Netflix series got announced, or people were talking about it, I'm like, oh, okay, that sounds interesting. Being that I like Eclipse Phase, which has a lot of the same things, and people were talking about how the opening scene of the Altered Carbon Netflix thing kind of was great because of how diverse it was, and then lots of people said, and then it quickly devolves into the grizzled white guy cyberpunk protagonist that we always have, and I kind of went, oh, okay, well, maybe I'll give it a pass, and then all this transphobia of the author came out, and I'm like, well, now I'm really going to give it a hard pass, so never mind.
And with the existence of Eclipse Phase, like, how necessary is this? We already have a setting where that's the idea, right, where we have the idea of sleeves and being able
there
to separate.
Is stuff that is different from what you're saying about Altered Carbon. Mm-hmm. Like, there may be, in Eclipse Phase, there may be like pockets of people who don't believe in having their cortical stack kind of re-sleeved. Mm. But in that Eclipse Phase universe, it's kind of standard practice. So the setup for Altered Carbon of kind of this legal matter of, can we bring this person back to testify when they've already said no? That's interesting. And that's something that Eclipse Phase doesn't have. Mm-hmm. Problem I ran into in running Eclipse Phase is because you could sleeve in all these different bodies, the players, Lyle and Chris, who were in that game, had trouble as players kind of, and understandably so, kind of understanding what was normal.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So constantly having to say, would my character think this is normal, and not having kind of a baseline. So that is the problem I ran into running Eclipse Phase. The system was also not to my taste, but the setting is some of the, apart from like Warhammer 40,000, that's some of like the best developed science fiction setting for RPGs I've seen. It was great. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, that's very cool. The creators are talking about their inspiration. Mm. So their new Hazard system cites its influences as Cortex, Savage Worlds,
and less interested.
And Hunter Entertainment's own Outbreak Undead.
Oh, okay.
So if you play those first two, you might be interested, where they're going with it. So it was a Kickstarter. It was a successful Kickstarter. And it price-wise, it seems okay. I mean, $25, you get a PDF. $50, you get a book.
That's kind of standard now.
$150, you get dice made of aluminum. I don't know. That must be
how many dice?
Material. I don't
know. For $150, you better get like a lot.
They better be.
Yeah. If the jump is $50 for the book, okay. $150 for the dice set. Like,
oh, wait. Oh. The faces of the dice can only be read under UV light.
That's interesting. Not $100 interesting.
Right. That's true. Yeah, I was just curious on your take about that, especially if these are very pure kind of game designers. They're just like, oh, okay, this is an interesting setting. Let's work on the system and let's put all this lore together. And oh shit, what's happening on Twitter?
Yeah. So I am kind of sympathetic, and I've seen people do kind of like, hey, we're gonna live stream this Altered Carbon game, and I've not said anything, but yeah, it's tricky because I guess what you have to do is some research and then like acknowledge certain things like that, because not saying anything kind of makes you not look that, the optics are not that great,
right,
in my opinion. So even if you just say, okay, we know this is problematic, here's how we're addressing it, or we're just cutting all that out, which I think is what you can do with the Lovecraft stuff, especially for like Fate of Cthulhu,
right,
which I'm interested in reading. They just go, okay, we know he was a horrible person, here's how we've addressed those issues, and we're just not dealing with it in the game.
No, I think that makes sense. So you may be happy to hear that Hot Topic is now carrying a line of Critical Role merchandise. Okay, maybe not. Maybe nothing. But I was surprised by this because I guess they already carried D&D, like already the Dragon Ampersand.
I mean, heck, Walmart and Target carry D&D stuff, I'm sure.
Yeah, right. So that's out there now. And I'm curious about like the licensing of this. Like, who owns this? Like, is there a company? Like, you know, after you watch the stream, is there like an LLC or whatever that they credit?
I do not know the specifics, but I remember when Critical Role started, I think they were part of that Geek and Sundry thing. And then there was like an announcement like, oh, we are our own thing now, kind of an amicable split. And I think Critical Role is their own company.
Wow.
Which is why I think there's valid criticism of the lack of diversity, where it's like, you're no longer a group of friends sitting around a table. You are a company, and your kind of employees slash cast kind of need to reflect better diversity. Mm-hmm. So to answer your question, I'm sure there was a licensing direct with the Critical Role company for Hot Topic.
Wow. Yeah. So I think the merchandise is where it's going to be. Oh my God. Yeah. So the merchandise they're carrying so far are a simple logo t-shirt with the Critical Role. But, if you're interested in something with the characters' faces on it, you can find a Mighty Nein shirt complete with Frumpkin. I have no idea what any of that means.
All I know is it's Critical Role Associated, and I will never buy it. Okay.
Yeah, so reading about this, I was surprised that there are, like you're saying, Target and many stores. Even the failing GameStop is starting to carry tabletop RPG dice and things now because, they're
scrounging for money?
For anything. Yeah. I think we're going to be looking at a line of Critical Role Funko Pops all that licensing stuff is
wow. All right. If you never hear from me again, I have quit the cast in rage. All right.
It's an interesting point, though, that they're getting into big licensing deals. Is that going to start to push off? I mean, they're supported very heavily, and I think their popularity is based on online fan support, fan art, and people wanting to participate. And now that, whoa, did you pay the licensing fee to draw my character? Like, you know, once these become a license they can sell, and once they, if they're going to go through the effort of trademarking everything that they're generating, all their original content, then that might be interesting that someday they're just gonna be like, oh yeah, sorry guys, I know you were
cease and desist.
yeah, right. And I know we didn't pay you for any of that fan art that we've been using, but
well, that's the other thing. I mean, again, being online as I am, the number of established companies who run those contests for, hey, art submissions, and the winner, we're gonna use your art on all this stuff and give you some compensation that is nowhere near what those royalties would be. I'm not saying that will happen with Critical Role, but I would not be surprised if it did just because so many other companies do it.
Right. Well, and as they kind of grow in size and, you know, if they stay so dominant, there could be, you know, management or somebody might kind of step in and say, listen, guys, you know, you think you're making a lot of money now. Look what we can do. I mean, we can Starbucks this this organization. Yeah, I don't know. But that made me laugh because I can just imagine what a Hot Topic looks like now. It's got to be a mess.
I think last time I went to a Hot Topic, I was in like university.
Speaking of
Hot Topic,
of other things, of things that make you squirm and you may not want to talk about.
All right.
This is not unclear because I've read kind of conflicting articles, but there was a leak of playtest materials for
5e. I know where this is going. Yep.
For 5e. And so it's the Unearthed Arcana 2, part 2, and subclasses. So subclasses were, some people were saying we guessed the URL and found these materials. Other people said people were.
Oh, really?
It was actually playtest materials that were officially submitted to playtesters, and then those leaked or got posted.
I thought this was stuff was officially released by Wizards.
Yeah, I think, but maybe not publicly. I don't know. Yeah. Okay. So a weird article said that they, you know, they dug around and found stuff, but it could just be that, you know, they knew where people posted playtest materials or one of the playtesters gave it away. But as I know, you have no love for 5e.
Right.
It appears 5e has no love because they attempted to create a cleric domain, the love domain. Mm-hmm. And so it isn't about sexual or erotic love, although it does mention fertility deities.
My interest is now waning. Okay, continue.
And it's citing examples of gods and goddesses in real life and fiction that could be associated with love. So they introduced this domain and exists in many forms. Compassion, infatuation, friendly affection, and passionate.
Coercion?
They don't specifically mention it. Passionate love with a few facets. So whatever form the feelings take, the god of love deepens those bonds between individuals. And immediately, one of these abilities created a something that went beyond charm person into a more coercive love-based ability. Do you remember?
I forget what it's called, but basically it gave them like a sudden like flash of affection where they would pretty much kind of do anything for the character for a short time.
Maybe this is it. So channel divinity, impulsive infatuation.
I think that's it.
That sounds like it, right? Yeah. So the affected target must attack at a target you designate, right?
Right,
those sorts of things. Yeah, so it's a more involved. I mean, but that idea of magic users being coercive and being able to, you know, create illusions or deceive you is coming. So why do you think that this specifically set people off?
Good question. So, like, following the discourse on Twitter, someone pointed out that this was also in 3.5. Mm-hmm. They had, like, love domain cleric in 3.5. Okay. So it's not really anything that new. I'm just seeing it again for 5e. And, yeah, the whole charm person mind-altering spells has always been not great, in terms of, like, consent and stuff. But I'm not sure exactly why this blew up. Mm-hmm. But I do know that I think it disappeared.
Yes, yes.
Yep.
They took it down, or kind of it disappeared from the playtest materials, and they're talking about retooling it. And specifically, people were calling out Jeremy Crawford on Twitter. A Twitter user said, "It seems WotC have tried to create a love domain for clerics in 5e. By some sheer coincidence, they seem to have accidentally created a roofie domain instead." That was the criticism. So calling them out, and they're going to retool it. Yeah, so the official version of Unearthed Arcana is still ahead of us. Our team will hold off answering any questions until you've seen the real deal. So right. I think they're going to...
They walked it back.
Yeah, try to rework it.
I forget who said it on Twitter, but I think this person made a really good point where they said, regardless of what you say, it's about Dungeons & Dragons, is about killing monsters and taking their stuff, right? So... anything for the game is going to be kind of viewed through that lens.
Yeah.
So even whatever love domain cleric they come up with, if they do it again, the goal is going to be killing stuff and taking its loot. So what is that going to look like?
Yeah. Yeah. You know? No, that's true. It's not going to be pretty, but you may get to make NPCs kiss orcs, though. That might be exciting.
You can do that anyway.
But and really, how much consent is there to, like, you know, a dagger in the heart? You know, it brings more complicated, I think, more complicated ideas than D&D is kind of
willing to grapple with.
Definitely.
Physical violence. I think at least in physical violence, like in that case, the target usually has armor class or like saving throws or whatever, which give them a chance to respond. Mm-hmm, where it got creepy is you're just kind of like, you kind of can't do anything.
You are infatuated.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We'll see what happens with that. But it does seem both maybe Paizo a little bit more than WotC, but they are reacting to kind of players' responses, like changing, like not using race, using race.
Like heritage or something?
Yes, yeah. And changing how modern day people want to use these systems and their sensitivities, like what they're going to be, what's not going to be okay. So another new release that it was a Kickstarter, but now it's going into kind of full retail release and is up for pre-order is Mirkborg, which is an art punk RPG.
Yes, that's the one I was talking to. I saw the book of that. One of the players at the last Kansai Japan International Gamers Guild Game Day had that book, and that book looks fantastic.
Yes, yeah, excellent art. So it's called A Pitch Black Apocalyptic Fantasy RPG about lost souls and fools seeking redemption, forgiveness, and the last remaining riches in a bleak and decaying world.
That's cheerful.
Yes. So it's a very OSR genre that can easily be adapted to your own homebrew. The style of the art and the book is just great.
Yeah, book was like this bright yellow spot varnish thing that looked completely awesome. And it was interior was like full color, and there was like a foil plate in there as well. And it's like, this looks amazing. Not putting the system down, but the system didn't really interest me all that much, only because it didn't seem anything special.
Right.
But still, the book looked fantastic.
Mm. Yeah, and this may be a new trend for Free League, because this book and system was produced by or designed by Stockholm Cartel, Johan Noor and Pelle Nielsen. So there's kind of a new label or imprint that Free League is using.
Oh, really? Okay.
To show off these more boutique kind of specialty games that are going to have, I think, very high production values. So we'll look forward to things like that. So Free League has kind of their own nice high-level style that they produce materials in, but now they're going for people that are really producing art books that are basically RPGs. Keep an eye out for Mirkborg, and you can probably pre-order that on the Free League website.
Speaking of art stuff,
yes.
I was thinking of doing some kind of, I've been interested in like zines and stuff, and due to the recent searches into horror-inspired synthwave, I've found all kinds of stuff. Right now, I am listening to Skeletactical by Espectrostatic.
Mm-hmm.
It is an amazing EP. It sounds like somebody took Mars Attacks and like ran it through a synthesizer and then put like a heavy dose of the theremin over it. Uh-huh. And it's like a great inspiration for sci-fi or retro sci-fi.
Nice. Stuff.
For Kickstarter, as of this recording, the Trophy Kickstarter is still going.
Oh, okay.
And they haven't announced details yet, but I think last year there was that Trophy Dark incursion writing contest.
Mm-hmm.
And several, if not many, of those submissions, I believe, are going to be included in the Trophy Dark book that's being kickstarted.
Nice.
I think around February 10th, they're going to announce a Trophy Gold incursion writing contest.
Oh, okay.
So the difference between those two are Trophy Dark is a lot more one-shot, where it's kind of expected you're not going to survive at the end of the little incursion. Trophy Gold is more OSR-ish, where things are still dangerous and gritty, but there's a slightly higher chance of your character surviving, and so there are campaign rules.
Nice.
Like, the idea in Trophy Gold is you have lots of either debts or obligations back home that force you to go out adventuring, and gold is a or money's much more of a motivator in that one, because if you come back without enough to pay off kind of your debts or obligations, you're going to end up destitute.
Oh.
So it acts as a real kind of motivator to keep pushing the characters into those situations that they're probably not going to survive from.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, that motivation, that's great for
exactly. Great, yeah. The other thing I've been doing is a couple, like, early as last year, I would have laughed very hard at the term of like solo RPGs. Now I'm like super interested in it.
Right.
And one of the games I just started is Iron Sworn by Sean Tompkin.
Mm-hmm.
This is another game where if you say you don't have money to try multiple systems, you're just not looking hard enough, because this game is free.
Ooh.
It looks amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And that Rangers of Shadow Deep game that we were talking about before, this reminds me of that a little bit.
Oh, cool.
Because like you're looking at a roughly 200-page PDF, downloadable print and play materials that look fantastic, all completely free. And there is a solo, a co-op, and a group mode. So you can play by yourself, you can play with another person without a GM, or you can kind of do the traditional GM stuff.
Nice.
And it's kind of a modified Power by the Apocalypse. Like, you have all these stats and kind of do things, and you're rolling dice against kind of, not a challenge rating, but challenge dice. And based on, you know, whether you get a kind of miss, weak hit, or strong hit, that kind of pushes these fiction prompts. And this thing is like real super involved. Like, I was expecting to build a character in 5 minutes. Like, I'm still building my character.
Wow.
And that's not a knock on the system, saying it's kind of is complex, but there's also a lot there, which, again, I can't believe this game is free. And I think the idea is, if you like it, you'll pick up the print copy, which I probably will end up doing.
Right. Wow. Well, that sounds very cool. Yeah, solo gaming has been coming up a lot with Outer Red Hands, because
we all have kids and no time.
That too. Yeah, we never can get together. But the starter set unboxings that we're doing, the Call of Cthulhu has a solo adventure to kind of teach how to run the game. So it kind of teach GMing and what you're going to run up against. And Lyle said it's fantastic.
Oh, right.
It's
nice.
Yeah, it's a really enjoyable and well done solo adventure to kind of educate. And so we're talking about, he kind of coined the term Gamer Zero, which is something we're running with. So, and I think Alan is the best Gamer Zero I've ever met, because any system he falls in love with and gets passionate about, he gets people to play.
Yep.
So you're kind of you're ground zero for learning the system, enjoying it, and then teaching it to other people and getting them involved in playing together and seeing what you see in that system and in that setting. So when we review the Call of Cthulhu starter set, I think Lyle will definitely be raving about how well that's done. So I think that's becoming a thing. I mean, it's a little sad, like the single person karaoke box in Japan.
a little bit, but then I also kind of like my goal here is to like run sessions by myself during lunch break, which is apparently what you can do, because like this is again kind of like a journal writing game. Like, you're going to write down the adventures of your character you're running through. So I do kind of, for me, gaming is a chance to socialize, and that's still the kind of primary goal of me playing games.
Right.
But I also now appreciate how people don't have a lot of time to get together, but still want to do something that isn't a video game or watching TV. And so, those kind of solo RPGs have become a lot more interesting to me.
And I think as far as a tool for teaching a system, I think that works really well, because basically what you're relying on if you want to GM a game is those, you know, boxed examples of, and then the dwarf rolls this and does this. And reading through that, you can on a surface level kind of understand a little bit of what's going on. But when you're actually rolling those dice and being one of those characters, right. I think you see, okay, this is exactly how this is going to work. And this is what I don't like about it. Or this is what's going to be interesting when we're actually playing it. So I think, yeah, for learning it and for being the person that's going to get other people to be able to teach other people, I think that's a very good way.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
So we'll see. And maybe that is the intent. If people remember in an earlier episode of the Alexa-based Starfinder. Yes. Yeah, so it's like, if you do this enough, you're like, you know what? I've had so much fun doing this. I want to play this game, this tabletop game, with people. That may have been the idea to get people excited enough. Because I think not necessarily the system, because if you know Pathfinder, Starfinder is not a huge leap, but the lore and, you know, the classes and how big that thing is takes some time. And so if you're enjoying some solo adventures and start to kind of put things together in, like, you know, who these different races are, who these different groups are, and how this system works, I think I think you'll be a much better GM at Starfinder.
Oh, you might be, yeah.
Who knows?
Last thing, in continuation of my Don't Consume Crap Media, Diablero Season 2 started the end of January.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's produced in Mexico. It's like a demon hunting kind of urban paranormal show. I got that wrong. It's a demon hunting urban fantasy show in Spanish, like set in Mexico City. It's nice to watch a show that's kind of not in English, that's kind of from a culture I wouldn't have otherwise, I guess, watched.
Mm-hmm.
And it's pretty diverse cast, but it's just, I don't know, it's just really cool.
Mm. Yeah. Wow. Well, I've got a recommendation then for you. I just finished watching, I think it's not that many. It's like 6 or 8 episodes. Luna Nera.
Okay.
It's a Italian kind of witch drama. So it's about a coven of witches. I like how they set up the world. It gets a little telenovela in the romance and drama.
All right. Well, that just increased my interest. All right.
It's cast really interestingly, and they do a good job of, when they're establishing the world, the opposing forces. So you basically have the church, which is backing these witch hunters, and the witch hunters, which kind of live in a hidden, it's kind of an abandoned castle that they've concealed with magic. And so they live there as a sanctuary, and they're trying to find other witches to bring them into safety, because the idea is in this world that witches are the defense of this evil that's going to consume the world. They're the only things that can stop it. And they do have the idea of the chosen one.
Right.
But it's within witches, and it's witches with swords. And so it's pretty cool.
Yeah,
I like that setting. And like you were saying, when it's in that context, like you're watching subtitled Italian, it gives you a different flavor from how, you know, fantasy is, like, you know, either British or American fantasy is portrayed. So I like that a lot.
Yeah. That sounds kind of like Diablero. Like, a better explanation is you have a freelance demon hunter and his little team of people, one of which is, you got like his sister, you got like this woman who can like channel demons. And again, there's the church in it because it's all kind of Christian based.
Mm-hmm.
The setup for season one is a priest has like a missing daughter who he thinks was abducted by demons and kind of like teams up with this demon hunter guy. And you have this nice dichotomy of like a priest who kind of believes in faith, but has never seen like physical manifestations of demons and kind of doesn't, you know, believe in that stuff, teaming up with demon hunters. And the church kind of gets involved. And season one got a little bit save the worldy for me at the end, but not enough to kind of ruin my enjoyment of it. And season two has kind of gone back to more what I'll call like street level stuff, which I thought was a lot more interesting, kind of like, you know, just kind of day-to-day stuff and interactions between the characters. And well, I made that sound boring, but it's really cool. But yeah, the same thing you said, watching the subtitles and not listening to something in English kind of gives you a different feel and just makes it a lot more interesting. Yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it takes it out of, it changes your expectations. And I think the kind of Romeo and Juliet story that happens in Luna Nera, I kind of forgave a lot more than I would have if it was on the CW or whatever. Right. I would have been, oh, this garbage again. All right. So there's some recommendations. All right. So where can people find you?
On Twitter, as always, where I am currently banging out a massive thread of bad B horror movie titles.
Oh, nice.
Or not. Yeah.
And I do a weekly live stream of my cartoon. So abusecartoons.com is the website. Sunday nights in North America, sometimes Monday nights, depending on the schedule. And on Twitch and YouTube. And the archive for that cartoon is gocomics.com/domesticabuse. And if you'd like to get in touch with Idle Red Hands, idleredhands.com is the website. Follow Idle Red Hands on Twitter at Idle Red Hands. And if you'd like to support the podcast, patreon.com/idleredhands. So that's it for this week. We'll be back next week.
Later, mortals.
Bye.
Sounds of a call.